The Jazz Spotlight, Episode 23. Yep, this is the Jazz Spotlight podcast. If it's your first time listening to the podcast, welcome, welcome, welcome. And if you have been listening to the podcast before, hello again and thank you for being with me today. Great episode here and great guest, and I'm sure that it's an episode that is going to be pretty useful for many of you, especially those who actually play music, the musicians, because the topic of today is how to get gigs, and I have a great guest for you. His name is Tony Dudley Evans, and he's a jazz promoter. He has been actually a jazz promoter for over 50 years. He's involved with the Jazzline programs at the Birmingham Symphony Hall in Birmingham, UK. And he's also involved with the popular Cheltenham Jazz Festival, where he had a talk that was titled How to Get Gigs. So, you know, if you're planning your next tour, or if you're an up-and-coming artist and you're thinking about how to you can get more gigs, you can find the notes to this episode, the things we talk about with Tony, at thejazzspotlight.com/episode23. And also, if you're new to the podcast, I would like to direct you to the page of the podcast where you can find all the past episodes of the podcast with great guests, artists like Dave Holland, Jamie Cullum, Jose James, Kevin Eubanks, Mark Carey, Michael Ligo, Snarky Puppy, Ezra Brown, Jen Chapin, and also experts like Bob Bionzinski of episode 2, who talked about social media, Buddy Vogt, and many, many more. You can find all the previous episodes at thejazzspotlight.com/podcast. Let's hear it. Here is Tony Dudley Evans with How to Get Gigs. Enjoy. All right, everyone. Yanni Lunga here, and welcome to this new episode of the Jazz Spotlight podcast. I hope you're having a good day. I'm having a fantastic day, and like always, I'm really excited about bringing you this new episode. Today, we're going to talk about a very hot topic. I'm sure that for many of you, this episode is going to be very valuable and full with tips, because we're going to talk about how to get gigs. And I have a super special guest for you. He's from Birmingham. He's a jazz promoter with 50 plus years of experience. He works as jazz advisor to the Jazz Lines program at the Town Hall Symphony Hall in Birmingham, and is also the program advisor to the popular Cheltenham Jazz Festival. It's with great pleasure that I welcome on the show Tony Dudley Evans. Hey, Tony, how are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. So for those of you who are listening, you probably know about the Cheltenham Jazz Festival. It's one of most important European jazz festivals of the spring. This year, it took place between the end of April and the beginning of May. And, you know, Tony had a great talk there, and I'm super excited, and I'm really glad that Tony is here with us today, because he's going to share some of the things he talked about, and he's going to give us some practical tips that we can use and that all of you can use. But before we go more into that, Tony, tell us a little bit about yourself, because I think you have a background, like you have studied languages, if I'm not wrong, and now you have been into the jazz world for many, many years. How did that come about?
Well, I was always an enthusiast for jazz right back when I was a teenager. Yes, at school I was good at learning languages. And I went on to study Arabic at university, and then I trained as a teacher of English, so teaching English to international students. So I did that for a long time, and I then came back. I did that abroad, and then I came back to this country, and I taught at the University of Birmingham. And always in my spare time, initially I was going to jazz concerts, and then I found myself organizing jazz concerts. So I kept this sort of double life.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's unbelievable, because, I mean, there's plenty of Jets lovers out there, but I don't think that many, you know, go from being a Jets fan, a Jets enthusiast, to really get your hands dirty into Jets or being a promoter. And how has that part of your life been?
Oh, well, I've really enjoyed it because it's given me the opportunity to get to know the musicians better, to have some sort of influence on what's appearing in Birmingham and at Cheltenham. Mm-hmm. And to give something back, because the music has given me a lot of pleasure over my life. So I can give something back by doing some of the organizing and setting up gigs and tours, etc.
That's very cool, the idea of, you know, of giving something back. And I have to ask you, because I'm sure that you have listened to so many artists, you have been to so many festivals and live concerts. How has Jets changed in this last 5-10 years?
Right. I think it's exploded in all sorts of different directions. When I first started listening to jazz, there were always the big names. There was Charlie Parker, and then there was Sonny Rollins, and then there was John Coltrane, Miles Davis, of course. And they had these big names, and people would follow trends that they set up. These days, there are so many different kinds of jazz, different styles appearing in different venues. So I actually think the scene is healthy. There are many interesting young bands coming up, and I find that healthy. I think another thing is that, you know, when I first started listening to jazz, which was more than 10 years ago, it was always, a quartet with saxophone, piano, bass, and drums, or a quintet adding a trumpet. Mm-hmm. And now there are different formats, different instruments involved, and that's very interesting as well.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting point that you brought up, because it's true that how that actually applies not only to jazz, but for many other music genres as well, how music has become more and more, you know, diverse, and really you go from duos, trios, quintet, ensembles, and all the kind of combinations of instruments that maybe some years ago they weren't as popular or as, you know, as mainstream in a way. And now we are in August, so now it's already a couple of months ago. At Cheltenham Festival, you talked about how to get gigs. So I would like that you will tell us a little bit about that. You would give us some practical tips. So for all the artists who are listening, what should they do to get gigs?
Right. Okay. Well, the first thing I'd say is that there are many, many good bands out there. It's very competitive. I'm always very impressed by every country that I go to, how many good bands there are. So it's difficult for a young band to get known and to get established by getting gigs. Mm-hmm. First of all, there's a festival like Cheltenham. Of course, that is a big international festival. We do take young unknown bands, but obviously the program is more dominated by name bands. So it would be very ambitious for a young band to be trying for the Cheltenham Jazz Festival. So what I'm really thinking about is the more regular round-the-year promotions in a city like Birmingham, or I'm thinking of England, in Leeds, Manchester, London, of course. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm thinking about. I think the other sort of preliminary thing I'd say is that it's a difficult process. It's difficult for the musician approaching the promoter, and it's difficult for the promoter trying to respond positively to the musician, because we all, as promoters, we get a lot of calls. Mm-hmm. We can only put on so many gigs, and we have to think about, you know, how many people will come. So really, it's a difficult process. I mean, the first thing is clearly the musician must get organized and, you know, have a nice sort of CV, a sample of the music, possibly something on Facebook or even a website. Mm-hmm. A more sort of philosophical thing, that they must really believe in what they're doing, They shouldn't be modest about what they're doing. They should really be assertive about their music, because if they're too modest, then they perhaps won't get listened to. The other obvious thing is that when you're approaching a promoter, you need to know a bit about that promoter.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have done some research into the promoter. You know, how often do they put on gigs? What day of the week do they put on gigs? What is the orientation of the program? Because it's a big mistake to ring somebody up if you are, you know, doing something more contemporary, if they have mostly a mainstream program.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the initial things that you have to, in a sense, do to get ready to approach a promoter. I think these days, my advice, there's a big question. Do we approach people by email, or do we try to telephone people? And I think there's some sort of variation between people. Some people prefer to get approaches through email. Others are probably more likely to respond if they get a telephone message.
Mm-hmm.
I personally, I use email every day, but just sort of observing my own behavior, if somebody can speak to me on the phone, I'm more likely to respond to that. So that's the first question. In terms of a procedure, I would say first contact with an email, saying, just introducing yourself and giving permission, asking for permission to send a CD. You know, can mm-hmm. I send you a CD? Would you like to hear the music? I mean, the answer to that will normally be, yes, I'd like to hear that. So establish a contact, but send the CD and then follow up ask whether they've had time to listen to the CD. If they haven't had time, can I ring back in 2 weeks' time? Maybe you will have had time to listen to the CD by then. So constantly, polite approaches. Recognizing that the promoter is probably a busy person,
mm-hmm.
But being persistent, I think that persistence pays off.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think that some of the things you have talked about relate with we have heard in the past from some of the guests. For example, on episode 7, we had saxophonist Ezra Brown, who talked about touring the world, and he talked about the professionalism of musicians today. He was talking about the New York City scene in specifically, and he said what you started off with, that there's plenty of good band out there, very good bands out there, so it's important that you try to keep up in every way possible. So from introducing yourself or your band in the most professional way possible. And also Christoph de Gelt on episode 8, he talked about music management and booking. And he also talked about what you said of doing the homework before, kind of sending random emails to promoters. Because I think that it's very important, like you said, that, to do some research before contacting the agency or the specific promoter. Because, they are very busy, like you said. And, if you just send an email that you basically just do copy-paste and send to hundreds of promoters, I don't think that it's going to get through. But the way you talked about of, spending time to put up a good CD and then sending a nice email asking permission to send a CD and then following up by phone, I think it's a very good way to go to, definitely. And what are some of the mistakes you see artists make or you have seen during these years, for example, with you? What are some of the common mistakes that you have seen?
Yes. Well, I think a common mistake is to give up. the danger is that rather than a yes or a no, that the musician approaching a promoter gets no response at all.
Mm-hmm.
This is often the complaint. And that many people say it's better. A no is almost as good as a yes, because at least it's clear what the situation is. So a mistake is to give up. You need to be persistent, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I think to recognize that a long period of silence probably means no. Just human beings are they find it difficult to say no in these situations. So silence should be interpreted as no. But it isn't necessarily no forever.
Mm-hmm.
It may be that it's no for that particular festival or for that period of time, but it doesn't necessarily mean no forever. So that's where, you know, to come back, always maintaining politeness, I think,
mm-hmm.
Is important. Yes, a big mistake is actually to get... I understand when musicians get impatient and get a little bit argumentative, you know, but that's always a mistake, I think. You will lose the support of the promoter, you lose the interest of the promoter if you get sort of argumentative and bad-tempered with them. I think that's a fairly obvious point.
Yeah, also because I think that sometimes musicians somehow forget that since they are the one getting in touch with the promoter, it means that they are the ones who are expecting to get something from the promoter.
Yes.
And that's why I agree with what you said, that, you know, it's good to maybe to follow up after some period of time. And that's why, in my opinion, I think it would be good that before getting in touch with promoters to make some kind of plan,
yes,
for example, on our Excel file sheet and just write down, you know, for example, okay, today I've emailed this many people, so that you know that, okay, I haven't heard, for example, in 2 weeks, maybe it's a good time to send another email to follow up, but so that you don't lose track. But I agree with you that the most important thing is to be polite and not to be pushy. And I have the same, even though I'm not looking for gigs, I'm looking for guests,
yes,
for this podcast. And I have had guests from the UK, like yourself, from Australia, from the States, and all kinds of guests, artists, promoters, experts. And it's really, people are really busy, like you said. And also, especially if you want to kind of have an international showcase or international network, there is time differences that sometimes, you know, the person you contact when you send the email, there it's maybe night. So, you know, that you're not going to hear for maybe the rest of the day. But to like, long story short, I think that what you said, it's very true that the most important thing is to be polite and also to be patient. And as I said, to make sure to keep track of all the things you are doing,
yes,
so that you know when to follow up and all these kind of things.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's a very good point, I think, about keeping some sort of record of calls made and making a note to call back in 1 month's time or something like that. Yes. I think the other thing is, certainly as a promoter and an enthusiast, I read reviews all the time. And so in the Guardian newspaper, when they have a jazz review, I always read that.
Mm-hmm.
I read things online on the various jazz websites. And if a band gets a review there, I will take notice of that. Obviously that's, again, a difficult thing to arrange. It's not in the hands of the band. But getting themselves known through reviews and news items, that really helps, I think,
mm-hmm,
raise the profile of the band. The other thing is, of course, these days, a lot of musicians arrange their own gigs. In the cities, there are a lot of self-promoted gigs, you know,
mm-hmm,
gigs running a weekly event. Certainly the Birmingham is thriving in that respect, and London as well. I believe Leeds and Manchester are similar in that respect. So, again, just from the point of view of getting yourself known, getting to the opportunity to really work through the music, setting up your own gigs can obviously help with that. And of course we know that jazz is a live music. Obviously there's a huge recorded legacy of jazz. But jazz has always been a live music. So the live event has got to be good. I think this is beginning to apply to all sorts of other styles of music as well, that we're told that there's very little money in recordings these days. That bands, rock bands, etc., make their money through touring. It's a situation where the live gig has to be good, has to be well presented. Things like starting on time, not taking a long interval, because you lose the patience, of the audience and things like that. I think, making sure the live experience for the audience is really positive.
Yeah, and actually, this is something like the self-organized gigs. It's something that we talked about on episode 13 with Jerry Goldstein. She talked about how to, kind of be your own booking agent, and talked about how to plan tours and, the right way to kind of look for gigs. And she also talked about the importance of a website that also keeps into consideration promoters, for example, because she was saying that today's many bands have a website, but which is mainly targeted at the fans, so it doesn't really provide a kind of content that is targeted to promoters. And I think that this also relates with the reviews, what you talked about earlier, when you mentioned the reviews. For example, you talked about the Guardian, and many other newspapers and websites. And this is actually something that I wanted to ask you as a promoter. When, for example, a band or an artist gets in touch with you, and then you kind of go and look, for example, at their websites, what are the things that you look at? You talked about the reviews, which are important. Are there other aspects that you really take into consideration?
Yes. I take notice of the reviews. I often start with that, with the words rather than the notes, just to read about the band and get some sort of background. But a clip, of the music is clearly very important. I prefer to listen to myself. I think I may be unusual in this respect, but I like to listen to music rather than watch a YouTube video. I'm not quite sure. I'm probably more of a person interested in sound than in visuals. So I personally prefer a clip just of the music. But I'm sure many other people like to see a video as well. One fairly obvious point is that it really needs to be something that is representative of the band. I have had the experience of listening to something, and maybe I've listened to the first two tracks, and then if I speak to the band, they say, "Oh, well, maybe track four was the best track." it is an obvious point, but put the best track first, because that's the most likely one to be listened to.
Yeah, and I think about your point about that you prefer to listen rather than watching videos. I think that a point that has to do with videos, it's also what Christoph de Gelt on episode 80 talked about the importance of having a quality work, whether it's on your website, on YouTube, or social media, because he was saying that sometimes artists, just upload, for example, on their YouTube channel, some video that maybe is not the best quality, either visually or from the audio perspective. And you never know who might end up watching your video. Might be very well a promoter that would have been interested in you, but after watching those kind of videos or listening, for example, to a low quality audio track on platforms like SoundCloud or even YouTube might very well say, well, too bad. Yeah. And I agree with you also about the importance of the first impression. So you said about the first couple of tracks of your CD that should be the best ones, the most catchy, the most representative. And I think that this kind of concept applies to everything. Also, for example, to a website, you want that the kind of the first impression is, you know, it's very good, because especially online, people tend to, you know, spend less and less time on a single website. So if the first impression is not good, people are probably just going to change site. And the same with the audio files or albums. Like you said, if the first 2-3 tracks of the records are not good, it's unlikely that the person listening to is going to get through all your, for example, 10, 12 tracks.
Yes. I recognize this is, you know, we're asking people to do more and more work, because, yes, it's definitely the case that however much, you know, you might make an allowance for the recording to be sort of not of low quality, you know, they say, oh, it's only a rough mix, but I'll send it to you anyway. It probably is a mistake, actually, to send something of low quality. Better to wait, I think, until you have something of the right quality. Yeah,
no, that's true. And I wanted to go back to the point of self-organized gigs, because that's a very, like you said, it's a very good way, you know, to kind of get started and get exposure. But I wanted to ask you, how about being a supporting act or opening band, you know, for example, for someone who is a prominent artist? How do you think is the right way to, you know, approach an established artist or band to ask them for, you know, for being an opening act?
Yes. Well, some promoters really like this. They like to have the two bands, and they will take the opportunity to present a young local band. Other promoters are not so keen on having, you know, the extra expense, even if that expense is minimal, of, you know, a support band. I mean, in my experience, it's usually better to approach the promoter in jazz. Mm-hmm. I think it may operate in a different way in the pop world, I think it's quite important in the pop world. But in jazz, I think it's the promoter, and I think the same sort of things that we've been talking about apply. It's certainly a good idea to try and get a support slot if you can, yes, because that will definitely, you know, if you're supporting a well-known band and there will be a good audience there, that obviously answers a lot of the points that we've been talking about, getting known, getting some sort of prominence, possibly getting a review as well. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned briefly also about social media, that you said, you know, have also links to possibly a website. You mentioned Facebook and Twitter. What do you think is a good way of using social media to get gigs?
Right. Well, I think it's a case of, you know, raising the profile of the band, yes, rather than directly approaching promoters through Facebook or, I mean, I always want to be approached by email or by the telephone. For me, I don't really use Facebook in the sense of communicating with, about gigs directly with people. Mm-hmm. So I think I would use Twitter and Facebook to just establish the band and, you know, gain profile, etc. I tend to use Twitter rather more than Facebook. So, you know, just gig announcements, you know, telling people about forthcoming gigs, reminders, etc. That's what I like about Twitter, is that the way it gives, you know, it helps you remember that a gig is coming up. So, yes, that would be my advice there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we've talked about, you know, gigs locally, like in your region, in your city, in your town. And for bands who are trying to, you know, aim higher in a way, and are, for example, thinking about a national tour, let's say, for example, in England, or even a bigger ones, you know, like, for example, in Europe, What is the, do you think that the process, in a way, is always pretty much the same, or are there some variations that you think come into play when it's about national or continental or world kind of?
Yes. Yes, I mean, obviously, I know Britain best. And I mean, first of all, it is, I think it's so important to get a series of dates, because that helps the music so much. If you play it 5 or 6 nights on in a row, then the music grows. If you're doing one gig one month and then another gig the next month, I mean, obviously that's still good, but the music doesn't grow in the way that it does on a tour with successive dates. I mean, in Britain, the infrastructure of jazz promotion is weak. I mean, a lot of it is voluntary promoters who do a great job, and they're enthusiasts like me, and they put on regular gigs. But it isn't necessarily the easy to set up a tour. I mean, in Britain there is some support for. I mean, Jazz Services runs a touring program, and what happens there is that. The band gets 6 or more dates and then can apply for some touring support. As you may know, that Jazz Services just lost its funding from the Arts Council, but it's very important, and I think that ways will be found to continue that touring support, because it's really important for jazz in this country. People find it very difficult to. You know, I know the British players find it difficult to get dates in other European countries, and setting up a tour. I'm not quite sure what the answer to that is. I suppose more collaboration between British promoters and European promoters and festivals as well is important to try and set up these links. I mean, with France, for example, we have a nice project called Jazz Shuttle, which enables British players to play with French players, and there is support for both rehearsal and touring. So we need more schemes of that kind. The European Jazz Network, I could develop much more of these collaborative tours across Europe, I think. But I don't have any simple answers for an individual band.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah, it's obviously that it's so that also some of the tips you are giving out, you know, we are people, so every promoter thinks in a different way, yeah. And you know, or venues and festivals. But you know, I think it's very good for the listeners to get a general idea and you know some tips on what to do and how to do it. And about the UK, would you have any tip for a foreign artist, for example, I don't know, from the States or South America, who would like to tour the UK, you know, jazz artists? What do you think, what kind of advice would you have for them?
Yes. It's interesting you say South America, because we don't get... any South American tours, or certainly in jazz anyway. American touring, yes, so that's quite established. I suppose a young, less well-known band coming from Europe or from the United States, etc. I suppose to make contact with one of the organizations that does do tours. I mean, Sirius, run by... this agency, Sirius, in London, they do organize international tours. It's usually more high-profile names rather than unnamed names, but it would be worth contacting them. I think then perhaps festivals would be the first port of call, if they could get into a festival, or if they can find some sort of agent that would run, try and set up a tour for them. For example, I mean, Snarky Puppy, that's a popular band at the moment, they became known through their website, and they had lots of followers on to their website. So when first step was to get in touch with an agent who was enthusiastic about their music, and he was able to set up a series of initial dates. And because of the success of the website, they were well supported, and they've gradually grown, and they now play to really very large audiences in this country. I mean, not everybody is able to do that sort of thing, but I think they are a model of how to break into the British market.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned Snarky Puppy, because I actually interviewed my colleague of Snarky Puppy on episode 5, and he talked about musical collaboration. So for all of those who are interested in Snarky Puppy, you should definitely go to the jetspotlight.com/episode 5, and you will hear the interview with Michael. But right. I agree with you. I think that they are, you know, they've had a very good career, especially this year. I've been following them quite a lot, and they've been really touring all over the world. They've just been so busy and traveling so much. And I think it's nice that you brought it up, and it's a kind of nice success story that many of the listeners could try to follow in a way, definitely. And is there something else that you would like to add about how to get gigs? Do you have other tips or suggestions?
Well, I think I've given all the specific sort of things that I would advise. I suppose it's this thing of being positive about your music and not getting depressed that, you know, if you don't get initial success and initial run of gigs,
mm-hmm.
Stick at it, I suppose, is what I would say.
And if you were to give one advice to musicians who are listening to the podcast and would like to have more gigs, what would you tell them?
Right. One thing, yes. I think make sure that your live performances are really good and really engage with the audience, mm-hmm. because the word will spread.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very good. And if you were to give advice to jazz promoters who are listening in related, you know, to gigs, what would you tell them, to your colleagues?
My colleagues is, yes, I would say, I think we have a responsibility to the scene to give opportunities to younger musicians and to take some risks. I sometimes feel that promoters are too risk averse. To give opportunities to young musicians, because that's the only way that the scene will grow.
That's a very nice word, Tony. Thank you very much. And if people would like to learn more about you, where can they find you online? You mentioned Twitter.
Well, more about me. I believe there is a Wikipedia page about me. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure who did it. anyways, there. I haven't actually looked at it for some time, but last time I looked at it about a year ago, it seemed to be reasonably up to date. What I do, you should look at the Town Hall Symphony Hall Birmingham website. Jazz Lines is now integrated into the big hall in Birmingham. We still have our independence, but we work within the hall, and the promotion is done by the marketing department. So the website there is thsh.co.uk/jazzlines. So there'll be lots of information there. And then the Cheltenham festivals, as you may know, there are Cheltenham festivals that run 4 festivals, and mm-hmm. jazz is just one of those. So the website there is cheltenhamfestivals.com, and then it's easy to move to the jazz festival site. So that's the where you can find out about the promotions.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also recommend the Jazz Breakfast website. That's written by a journalist. Well, he was a journalist. He's now retired from that. He runs a website which he updates every day called the Jazz Breakfast. jazzbreakfast.com. And that has a lot of information about jazz in the Midlands. I occasionally write things for him, write reviews, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good source of information about what's happening.
All right, Tony. Thank you so much for sharing all these links. I will make sure to put them in the post so that people can find all the links of the things you've talked about. Tony, thank you so much for being with us today, for sharing some tips on how to get gigs and giving out plenty of advice and telling us also a little bit more about yourself.
Right. Well, thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me, and I've enjoyed talking to you.
My pleasure. Thank you. And we are back. First thing first, I'd like to thank my guest. So, Tony, if you're listening to this episode, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the show and for giving out advice on how to get gigs. And a quick note to the listeners, you know, to those who have been listening to the podcast before, in case you were wondering about the audio, it was actually a bit different compared to the past episodes, because this was the first interview I did using Skype and phone line. So I used Skype to call Tony on the phone. So that's why the audio was a little bit different compared to the past. And to wrap up this episode, I'd like to direct you to some of the episodes of the past, because some of the things we've talked about with Tony in this episode, you know, about the process of how to get gigs, the things you should have and what you should do in order to get gigs, some of the things have popped up in the past in different episodes, so I would like to point you to some of them. The first one I would like to recommend you is episode 2. So if you haven't listened yet, go to thejazzspotlight.com/episode 2, where I had on the show Bobby Ozinski and we talked about effective online promotion. So Bobby and I talked about how to, you know, promote yourself online, both with a website and social media. So make sure to check that out. And the second episode I'd like to direct you to is the episode 13. So thejazzspotlight.com/episode 13, where I had Jerry Goldstein on the podcast. Then we talked about how to plan tours and, you know, think about gigs. And specifically, we talked about what you should do when planning tours and what you should have on your website in order to get more gigs. So that's very interesting. And I'm sure that some of the things we talked about, some of the things Jerry said she sees many artists are actually not doing on the website, I'm pretty sure that some of those things you are doing them right now. So make sure to check first episode 2 and then episode 13. And after that, head over to thejazzspotlight.com/episode 7 to hear about touring the world. On episode 7, there was saxophonist Axel Brown who talked about touring the world. He's touring quite a lot in the US, in Europe, Asia, Africa. And I think what's very interesting about the episode is not only that Ezra shared some, you know, funny stories and anecdotes, but he also talked about the business side of music and, you know, the business aspects of being on the road, and also the things he does when he's on the road in terms of networking, apps he uses to keep in touch with his fans and increase his network. So I definitely recommend episode 7. And also episode 8 with Christophe de Gelt, we talked about music management and booking. So again, you know, some of the, you know, it's like a puzzle and the pieces come together. So if you have enjoyed this episode and you're gonna go to listen to the past episodes, if you haven't yet, the ones I just mentioned, I've actually an announcement to make. Are you hungry for more gigs? Would you like to get more gigs and would like to get some tips on how to do it? Okay, guess what? Next week, I'm gonna have another guest from Australia who, in addition to being a great jazz singer, she also blogs and writes about the business side of music, and she's gonna tell us more about the things artists should keep in mind when thinking about gigs. So if you'd like to learn more about that, make sure to check out next week thejazzspotlight.com/episode 24. I'm Yann Ilunga and this is the Jazz Spotlight Podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.